Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. Oh boy, we have a treat for y'all tonight. Tonight's episode topic, we are talking about the fourth dimension. And David, I'm going to let you start off and bring everybody up to speed about what we're going to be talking about when we're actually exploring the fourth dimension. I mean, what is it? You know, why are we talking about the fourth dimension?
Well, the fourth dimension, interestingly enough, that I remember coming across that idea of the fourth dimension for the first time in Cosmos, Carl Sagan's Cosmos.
Oh.
Do you remember that series?
No, I think that was a little before my time.
Oh, okay. It was awesome. It really kind of filled me with delight. Carl Sagan was a scientist of his day, and he wrote the fictional story Contact, which the movie is based on.
Oh, that's the one where he starts out billions and billions of stars.
Stars and molecules. He had talked about the fourth dimension. He talked about, of course, the first, second, and third dimension. And then he talked about the fourth dimension. He'd held up a tesseract. It's easy enough to Google. A tesseract is kind of a cube within a cube.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a cube and put it inside another cube and then draw lines to each of the corners, this would be a third-dimensional representation of a fourth-dimensional object. I was kind of like, oh, I really was digging this idea, but I couldn't wrap my brain around. So basically, it's kind of like a bigger shadow that are three dimensions or a shadow of fourth-dimensional objects. Is that what that is? And I really tried to play with that for a long time and tried to grasp it. And, of course, at the time, not really thinking of myself as fourth dimensional, I was really having trouble with it. And if you go online and you actually look up tesseracts and you look up fourth dimension or something like that, I don't really know what you look up. I remember once upon a time, you know, looking up fourth dimension, and they had this tesseract and they had like a moving, like, you know, one of those animated JPEGs or animated GIFs.
Cool.
And it looks like this thing that I described that Carl Sagan held up. They have him showing it rotating in and of itself so that the inside cube becomes the outside cube.
Oh, that reminds me of a tube torus.
Like a tube torus?
Yeah.
You mean the kind of the donut idea?
Yeah, where you have the donut and, you know, it can move into itself and it comes out. And I was kind of introduced to that through my mentor, Jan, when we were working with the Mayan Zolkin. She was just like, I can see how the Zolkin wraps around the tube torus and moves in and out, and this would be, you know, the flow of time through space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that time, and even right now, it's just like, I feel like I understand it, but my mind won't work. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I get the concept, I feel like I should understand it, but when I try to use my logic and my brain and my visual ability, I can't see it.
Hmm. Yeah.
But okay. It's something more that I have to just, you know, feel, you know?
Well, I know what you're saying, and it's difficult to do because we're confined in three dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think we kind of go in and out of fourth dimensions. I think we can operate from a fourth dimensional perspective, but we can't experience it fully because we have to experience everything from three dimensions, I guess, from a physical construct. And I say physical construct because, not to say that physical items are not fourth dimensional. The third dimensions, I think, is buying into the idea of the physics. In other words, I think when we really start looking at things from a fourth dimensional aspect, we start to understand the space between everything. And I don't mean like from here to the wall. I'm talking about that umpteen amounts of space in between an electron and a nucleus.
Mm-hmm.
Or like we talked about the whole idea of space between one star and another star, all that other kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, how matter is mostly empty space.
Oh, yeah.
I think we start understanding that really matter is nothing more than just vibrations and frequencies, and we really understand it more on that level than we do now. If it's solid, it's solid. I think in fourth dimensional, you can perceive everything as energy and understand it as energy more than we can now.
My understanding is one dimensional is like a dot, and, you know, an incomprehensible dot that can go smaller and smaller, and size is non-existent for a dot. And then at two dimensions, it's kind of like a sheet of paper. It's only that thin plane or whatever, where it's just you got the front and you got the back. And then the third dimension, you know, we have kind of a perception of depth, where we have a front and a back and a up and a down or sideways. What is added to the fourth dimension that is not in the third, second, or first dimension?
Well, the idea that's been tossed around is that time is a component of the fourth dimension, or time-space, or space-time, which apparently there's a differentiation between time-space and space-time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know what that is. Okay. But apparently that's the kind of defining and dividing factor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of it more so as this. There's a bodies exhibit that has kind of gone around the country. Did you ever see it?
No, I haven't.
Are you familiar with it?
I've heard of it, yeah.
What they do is they actually take human cadavers and they fill them with some kind of material and they preserve the whole body. And then what they do is there's parts of this exhibit where they actually slice up and take cross sections of something like a pancreas or a liver or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you see this kind of really flat object that's just a slice of a liver. And you get to kind of see the inside components of it and the inside components of all these different, like the brain and all this other stuff. Well, I think of the fourth dimension is, would look at the third dimension as what we see, like right the moment that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
From a fourth dimension perspective, our moment is just a cross section. To us, it's the whole thing. Like, for example, if you're a two-dimensional creature and you wanted to see an entire third-dimensional image,
mm-hmm.
you would have to kind of take like two-dimensional planes and stack them one on top of another, and the two-dimensional creature would have to walk around the three-dimensional object and watch it kind of change its shape as each two-dimensional plane is stacked one on top of another.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense at all?
Kind of like if you had a, we'll say the elephant in the room analogy, where you're only able to see what you're able to see with like a flashlight. You have a very narrow beam for the flashlight. So first you turn it on and you see the trunk and you see the tail wagging, like, okay, well, then you have to move around to the side to see the rest of the side of the elephant. And then you move around to the front to see the trunk and the ears and everything. Once you map out what the elephant looks like, then you can have a concept in your brain of, okay, so the whole creature looks like this. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, where a two-dimensional being would have to move around a third-dimensional being to get an idea of what a third-dimensional being is like.
Right, exactly. So if you took like a cone, say you placed a cone on a two-dimensional surface,
mm-hmm.
on the first plane, the two-dimensional would see this creature would walk around and see a circle. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And we just kind of have an idea that it's traveling. Then you take the plane and move it up a little bit, and then the two-dimensional creature walks around a smaller circle, and as each plane moves up, the two-dimensional creature keeps walking around smaller and smaller, smaller circles until it gets to the top plane where it's just walking around a point. And I think for us to really be able to understand a fourth-dimensional idea, it's almost like we would have to walk around the sum total of our third dimensional existence, which would be, from a fourth dimensional perspective, you would be able to see how we are throughout time. You'd be able to see us throughout time in a single vision.
Kind of like looking at a stop sign. You know, we look at a stop sign and it's like we see the whole sign just with one glance. And you're talking about the whole length and breadth of history and of the whole planet would be, to a fourth dimensional person, they'd be able to see it like we see a stop sign. They'd be able to see everything right then and there immediately.
Right. As far as they're concerned, you would be, it's just kind of changing angles to see you as a 4-year-old, as a 44-year-old, and as an 84-year-old. That all those things are visible right in front of a fourth dimensional entity.
So if we take the whole stop sign analogy, to see either you or me specifically would be like us, you know, getting really close to the stop sign with a magnifying glass and looking at a little molecule of, or a little piece of dirt or crud or whatever that has, you know, thrown up on it. Kind of like, let's say it rained and a car came by and a little piece of mud splattered on the stop sign, and be like, look, we're looking at just a little itty bitty drop on the whole sign. And that'd be like a fourth dimensional person zeroing in on, you know, an individual such as ourselves.
Zeroing in? You mean on what part of the individual? Just the individual as a whole, or?
From a fourth dimensional perspective, if we're able to see all of history, of all of time, you know, in kind of like a snapshot, then to see an individual such as you specifically or me specifically, wouldn't we have to zero in on it? Wouldn't we have to separate the perception of all of history into one person or one thing in history?
Well, I think we do that by default as we go through time. From a fourth dimensional perspective, yeah, I think I see what you're saying. You would have to kind of focus in. But then again, here's the thing. If I was a fourth dimensional object trying to communicate with a third dimensional being, how would I know where your awareness resides? In other words, if I'm trying to communicate with you, I mean, I've got to say, well, I'm just going to give you a blanket communication. At what point in time are you going to perceive what the message I'm sending you?
Oh, I just had a weird thought where it's like solar flares are fourth dimensional beings trying to contact us.
You never know.
You know, kind of like the whole radio signals that we send out in Morse code or whatever, or mathematical equations. And it's just like, well, you know, if we measure the length of and size of a solar flare and where it comes out from the sun, it has mathematical properties. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to communicate with a civilization that understands math and can actually calculate and measure solar flares, then all you'd have to do is basically move the solar flare in a way that makes it mathematically relevant to the civilization watching it. I don't know what the message would be like, eat at Joe's, like, where's Joe? And like, he's in the fourth dimension, dude. Like, oh man, how do we get there? It's a drive-through. Where's the drive-through, dude? If we have to tell you, you might as well just forget about it. Would we even be able to understand a message that came from the fourth dimension?
Oh, why not? As long as it came to us in the right perspective. It's like asking, if we're using the two-dimensional creature analogy, how would we get a message to a two-dimensional creature? We would have to think in two dimensions and render that object to them. If you think about the spirit, the spiritual realm, and when people talk about their spirit guides or angels or any of those kind of energies, I'm sure you've heard this before, when they say, when you're going to address your spiritual guides and ask your spiritual guides or angels or anything for anything, when you ask them for something, don't put a timeline on it because they don't have any sense of time. Have you heard that before?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
I think it's the same idea for when you're in the fourth dimension, you've got to kind of try to figure out how you're going to translate what now means to us to what it means to when you're from a fourth dimensional perspective.
Kind of like using the whole time limit thing, where you're sitting there doing your work, you're really into it or whatever, and then all of a sudden your stomach growls really loud, like, oh, I'm hungry. Not thinking about it, like, I'm hungry, must eat. Now I go and I'm walking and I'm walking and I'm going to get something to eat. And moving in just a in the moment, that's how you communicate with your guides, so that you don't put a time limit on and saying, I'm hungry, I'd like food. Can I have some now? It's like, we will help you, we will guide you to a source of food so that you don't die prematurely. You know? Yeah, I've definitely heard that. Also, I've also heard that with the law of attraction, too. The more constrictions you put on something, the more difficult it is to bring it into your life, depending on where you are and how close you are to that.
What do you mean by constrictions?
Well, okay, let's put it this way. Let's say you're looking for your next romantic relationship. You're like, I want to have a romantic relationship. Well, leaving it just at that, you could end up with a guy, a girl, an animal. You could end up with a number of different things that could, you know, end up being a romantic relationship. And it would be a lot quicker and a lot easier to produce that romantic relationship when you start putting restrictions on it, such as, well, I want them to be human. That's like, okay, that all of a sudden takes out a whole bunch of possibilities. And yeah, I know I'm going into kind of a eerie place here, but just stay with me here for just a moment. Like, that tree looks so pretty. Tree hugger. I'm like, you know it. But so you say, I want a romantic relationship with a human species. Like, okay, well, I don't really care to have a romantic relationship with someone outside of my culture. Okay, so that takes out a whole bunch of other possibilities. And then you have, say, I would like to have a romantic relationship with a specific gender, such as male or female.
So what you're saying is you put guidelines on it, as you kind of define it more and more and more, you're narrowing the scope.
Yeah, which means it takes more time for that to happen in a third dimensional reality, because you have to, one, be open to meeting somebody like that. It's kind of like if you say, I just want a romantic relationship, then you can find that instantly almost. But if you have a romantic relationship with a person from your culture who has a certain height, certain eye color, and certain this and that and everything else, then, you know, the universe has to work and guide you and guide them to you to meet under certain circumstances so that a romantic relationship can start.
Well, see, here's the thing about that.
Okay.
I think there is a lot of merit to that, and I also say that it's not necessarily a blanket truth that the more you make something specific, the longer it's going to take as far as manifesting across time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're kind of chained, like I always say, we're chained to time in the third dimension. I think you can actually kind of cut a path through time. You can almost walk through a wall, the wall of time, as it were.
Hmm. Explain that more. What are you talking about? I'm curious as to where you're at.
Okay. Let's say point A and point B. Point A is, I want this romantic relationship. And point B is being in the romantic relationship. From what I understand you're saying is to get from point A to point B is a lot quicker when you're a lot more open.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not all of a sudden narrowing your scope. Where if you go from point A to point B and you have a lot of specifics that you're putting in play, you've actually stretched out the amount of time it's going to get from point A to point B. It's almost like you're crawling through a more narrow pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to move, and so it's going to take longer to get through. Well, here's what I would say. You can get through a more narrow pipe if you're designed well to fit that pipe. If that pipe is designed right, you can get from point A to point B in rocket time.
Oh, yeah.
This is a way to operate fourth dimensionally, is when you remove the constraints of time by operating in flow with kind of a fourth dimensional way of working.
Well, yeah, and I look at it from this perspective, whereas the closer you are to being open to the type of romantic relationship, even with all your restrictions that and guidelines you want to have in that relationship, you're able to move extremely quickly towards that. But if you were able to do that, why wouldn't you already be in a relationship?
Well, because I believe that if you're not in a relationship, there's a reason that you have that you're keeping yourself out of a relationship.
Exactly, and that's what I'm talking about with moving through the whole idea of time, where the time from when you have a thought of or a desire of what you would like to when you actually acquire that desire, in third dimensional reality, you have to allow yourself to become the person that is able to have what you desire. I mean, we could use another example too. If we take it out of the whole romantic thing, is like, you know, some people say, well, I'd like $1 million. According to you, and correct me if I'm wrong, from what you said, is the time between having the thought of having $1 million in your bank account and actually physically acquiring the $1 million could be very short amount of time. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, yeah, I agree with you completely. It can be extremely short amount of time. It could be a few hours to a few days to a few years to a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. If you're fourth dimensional, there is no difference between a day and a lifetime.
Exactly. But for us on third dimensional, we look at that idea of the whole idea of time as like, well, you know, if I start when I'm 2 years old, by the time I'm 80, I might have $1 million.
Well, let me throw this out then there for you. Have you ever waited in a line? I know this. You may not have. I know that you may not have been in a queue of any sort. So I have to ask first.
I've lived on a deserted island most of my life. That's where I am right now. I've never had to deal with lines. What are you talking mm-hmm. about? If I look out my window, you know, I see the palm trees and the ocean. And, well, that'd be a nice place if I actually could do that.
Yeah, but if you're not stuck there shipwrecked, you have to live on coconuts and gerbils.
It sounds like an episode or the whole series of Lost.
Yeah. Yeah, Lost describes it pretty well.
Yes, I've stood in line to answer your question.
So, you know, here's the thing. When you've stood in line, how long did it take to get through that line?
Different lines, different times.
Right. But was it the line? When you stood in line for 15 minutes, did it feel like 15 minutes every single time?
No. Oh, you're talking about the perception of time.
But perception is reality. I believe that 100%. Okay. So if you go through a line, the more impatient you are, the longer it takes to get through the line. The more patient you are, the quicker the line seems to go. Because 15 minutes is irrelevant to you when you're patient. And I'm going to tie this back to wanting.
Okay.
When you want something, you're stretching time out. Because here's the thing about it. It's a matter of focus and it's a matter of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think fourth dimensions really come into play.
Okay.
The reason I think law of attraction works and the reason and what they always teach in the law of attraction is that once you set an intention, the universe creates it for you immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way you understand
it? Oh, yeah, completely.
Yeah. If you say, I'm setting the intention, and then it is already in play, that means that there is no such thing as time. If we sit there wanting it, we're actually pushing out that amount of time longer because we're focusing on the gap between when we want something and when we have something.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, why they say it's so important to set the intention then and walk away.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this in other podcasts where in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, that there's a part in there where, you know, the shamans were saying, there's ships out there, there's big clouds, they're coming towards us. And the other villagers were just like, we don't see anything. I think you've totally lost it, dude. And then all of a sudden, you know, they were able to...
Those shaman, they are wacky.
Yeah.
Wacky shaman.
Sounds like a bubblegum or some kind of, you know, interesting high. It's like... So what are you smoking? Wacky shaman. Can I have one? Sure, man. But don't Bogart the whole thing.
Yeah. So. Shamans are the Bogarts.
Yeah. Well, how do you think they travel to, you know, other worlds and whatnot?
Exactly.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the movie, then all of a sudden, you know, they were able to describe these ships to their tribes and whatnot. And then all of a sudden, the tribes had a concept, and they were able to see, oh, there is something out there. I see what you're seeing now. And it's kind of like the moment we can imagine it or have the thought of it, it's already created.
Right.
It just hasn't necessarily manifested in third dimensional reality yet.
Right, exactly. And I think for it getting to the point for me creating it and getting into your hot little hands, the more in line you are and the more kind of in a good balanced place you are to where you can just kind of put it out there, and the time it takes to get from set the intention to when we receive it,
mm-hmm.
the more out of balance we are and the more we look at it as not having it, the more complex of a what's the machine again?
Goldberg?
Rube Goldberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, the more complex the Rube Goldberg machine we make is.
Ah.
Where it could be just coming out of a gun and we, you know, we catch the bullet versus it's going, you know, down the stairs and swinging and dropping things in the toasters and all of a sudden all that other stuff. I think it's almost like we're building a psychic obstacle course when we do this. And I think that's kind of when we're working in a fourth dimensional realm, that's what happens. The more we tie ourselves to the third dimension physical aspects, the more the third dimension kind of steps in between the whole fourth dimensional thing. It's if we take a third dimensional or a fourth dimensional perspective.
Well, that brings up the question, are we able from a third dimension perspective and consciousness able to work in a fourth dimensional realm at a level where we're kind of halfway in both the third and the fourth dimension, so that when we have a desire or for something to physically manifest in our third dimension, then the time is almost instant from when it goes from our fourth dimension to our physical third dimension?
I think that would take an evolution of consciousness before we can do that.
And what would that evolution of consciousness look like? I mean, what's to say we don't have it now?
Well, I think we do kind of play in and out of fourth dimensional. Our spiritual growth is so dependent on third dimensional experience. And I think the lesson is okay, here's my wacky idea about this.
Okay.
Because I always have one in every episode.
Your wacky tacky that you're feeding to the shamans.
It's that shaman juice that they're drinking and smoking. It's coming from me. Shaman, you can blame me. It's the whole thing is I think we're on third part of a lot of the third dimensional experience is the what I call the forgetting. It's the forgetting that we are creating our own reality. As long as a species or an entity or a consciousness or whatever you want to call us human bred, as long as we believe that life is happening to us, that we're just along for the ride, that we're a boat on the waves of events on the ocean, we're going to go through the third dimensional experience. And we can only release being chained to the third dimensional experience when we realize that we are not chained to the third dimensional experience. And we'll know we're not when we say, all right, I am going to take complete ownership of the fact that I create my own reality. Mm-hmm. Our precepts and our concepts are not there yet. As long as we believe in things like good and evil, as long as we believe somebody did something to us evil and that we didn't have any hand in on a greater level, on a big, giant, out there life level, on a between lives level, as long as we believe that we are not complicit in the things that happen to us, we are going to continue the third dimensional experience until we get it. But it's too dangerous and scary for most people to do that.
Yeah, because what if everything that you knew all of a sudden changed where, you know, the moment you had a thought, all of a sudden it happened. People have so many random thoughts throughout the day of, you know, what they'd consider good thoughts and not so great thoughts that the idea of their not so great thoughts happening would scare the crap out of them.
But they do anyway, Donald.
Yeah, I know. But
they do happen. I mean, they happen. You could say that their not so great thoughts would scare the crap out of them. But they are having those not-so-great thoughts, which is basically experiencing a mono-level, and it is scaring the crap out of them.
From what I understand from what you're saying is if you're able to allow yourself to open up, you know, much more to a fourth-dimensional existence or being or living or consciousness, then you'd be more open to the results and experiences from thoughts that you have coming to life instantly. And I think a lot of people right now, or if not everybody, on third dimensional reality that we live in, you know, that would be a little freaky because, you know, someone cuts you off in traffic, like, I hope you go to hell and you die. And then all of a sudden that person ends up in your concept of hell. And it's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. And then they're back in their car and it's just like, okay. Whew, that was a close one, and they experienced your hell, your concept of hell for 2 seconds, and then you say, man, like what we were talking about just a moment ago, you know, with the shamans and their wacky-tacky gooey juice. If the moment we had that thought, shamans would show up offering you and I both, you know, what they have, what they're smoking, and it'd be like, Okay. gotta stop recording for a minute, guys. We'll be back. We'll edit it out. No worries. And that takes a much bigger amount of responsibility for what you think and what you feel.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. However, that's, I think, the crux of it, what you're saying right there. It's that people don't want to take the responsibility for it because it has the illusion of being easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you say, well, you know what, this happened to me, then you could say, well, it's not my fault, so I don't have to take the responsibility for it, so you don't have to do any work. However, it's not that you're doing work. You're still going through, to me, a suffering, because I believe suffering is self-created.
Oh, yeah. Although there is an idea that if all of a sudden you're able to consistently work from a fourth dimensional level, you could easily create your own little sandbox where you learn to, you know, train your brain to think certain thoughts and be in a certain way where, you know, it wouldn't be detrimental or harmful to other beings on, say, third or second dimensional or even fourth dimensional. Imagine if we were on the fourth dimension, like, yeah, you know, and we get mad at each other or something like that. And it's like, spikes! You know, it's almost like a... It'd be almost kind of like one of those old games. Oh, like role-playing games. You know, it's like role-playing. It's like, I roll a D30 or D20 for a shield of protection on your freezing, you know, ray and everything like that. But without having to do the dice and everything, it's just like, you know, spikes at you and like, shield up. Block, block, block. Okay, we're all good because we're on the fourth dimension and everything that we personally believe and think of instantly manifests. So when we actually interact with each other, we, all our thoughts and the whole idea of our consciousness would, you know, from my perspective, meld into one, and we'd be able to be two separate consciousnesses sharing one, you know, one area. If you're in fourth dimension, I guess you wouldn't really have a physical body as we know it now. So does this make sense at all to you?
It kind of does. I think I know what you're saying. What you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that from a fourth dimensional perspective, if things happen instantaneously and you had conflict with another person, the conflicts would be so immediate that you would be able to resolve them? Is that what I'm understanding?
That they would play themselves out in the blink of an eye. You got into an argument with this person on the fourth dimension, and you just had this thought of, you know, you just wanted to punch him in the face. Well, you would instantly be punching them in the face, but they would also instantly be seeing you punching them in the face, and they would instantly be able to block or move. Aggression and stuff like that probably wouldn't work too well because you would be able to land your punch, but yet you'd be able to miss it because they were able to move it as well. And if everyone is getting what their thoughts are creating, then we'd basically end up in an argument or whatever on the fourth dimension, basically having this instant repertoire where we could do thousands and thousands of years in, you know, a millisecond.
I want to talk about that for a second.
Okay.
And I think that's a very important point because it can take us down an interesting path. Aggression and arguments, they're very third dimensional if you think about them. I know what you're saying, but I think we have to take it a step further that... That whole conflict that you're talking about really has less impact and implication in a fourth dimensional idea, because if you're having a conflict with someone else, the conflicts are tend to be third dimensionally based. They can be fourth dimensionally based. Let's say that it's not, you took my piece of land. That's a very third dimensional thing. Land is third dimensional. What if it's you hurt my feelings? Then what is going on there? What is the whole fourth dimensional aspect there as far as feelings go? I would say feelings are more fourth dimensional than anything, because feelings contain a lot of energy but don't contain much physicality.
See, I would see thoughts and feelings or feelings being more fifth dimensional.
So what would you differentiate between fourth and fifth dimensional?
Fourth dimensional has to do with time, and fifth dimensional has to do with emotions. In other words, in a fourth dimensional, like what we've been talking about, you know, the idea of linear time does not necessarily exist, where we're able to perceive all of time all at once, like at any given one moment. Whereas in fifth dimension, for me personally, the only thing I've been able to come up with is, well, we have third dimension that has the XYZ axis and, you know, space, time, and depth and perception. And then we have fourth dimension that has time. And then once we get into the fifth dimension, the only thing I can really see is stuff that goes outside of the more mathematical, that gets into more of the feeling part, the more of the non-measurable parts at the moment, where fifth dimension would be more of emotion or something to that nature.
So what is emotion, if that's the case?
See, I think emotion is an aspect of our ego, our spirit, and our consciousness all working in concert together.
Ego, spirit, and consciousness working all in concert together.
Yeah. And okay. So on the fifth dimension, I don't think we'd have ego. So all we'd have is spirit and consciousness.
So if we have spirit and consciousness, then the emotion is just that? That emotion is really spirit and consciousness without any self-awareness or self-recognition or a way of identifying the self? Is that what you mean?
That's where the spirit part comes in, because the spirit part is more of us at our core. It's more of us at our very specific nature. Without our ability to self-identify us as separate, or we want this or we don't want that, you know, we become a very specific type of energy, and that would be our spirit. That would be our kind of our personality, who we are at our, you know, at our absolute base core, without all the needs that we have that require us to have when we're having a physical body, where it's like, I need to eat, I need to feed my physical body so it doesn't die. When we're on a fifth dimension, we don't need to have a physical body. We're able to perceive time and everything from the fourth dimension. And on the fifth dimension, we have an idea of how does this emotional response from this looking over here experience or whatever affect us? What kind of emotions does it bring up in us? The fifth dimension then can recycle back through, you know, time and into the third dimension that we experience right now from our spirit. And this is kind of an idea I've been toying around with lately. This could be our higher self aspect, seeing it from a larger perspective that is not constrained by the physical body and everything that we need to do to keep it alive and, you know, keep it healthy.
So would you say that maybe the emotions that you're talking about on the fifth dimension are kind of like energizers, that it's the kind of energy source for manifestation or for creation? In other words, it's like it's almost like magnetic. So, because you know what they say is, they say that when you're doing a visualization, you're supposed to kind of visualize the very emotions that go with the feeling of having what it is you want.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So if that's the case, does that imply that the fourth dimension is actually kind of propelled by fifth dimensional energy, which would be emotions in the case that you're talking about?
Yeah, because I think between the fourth and fifth dimensions, there's kind of this chasm from what I understand at the moment, where we're going from more of a scientific theoretical idea that we can actually come up with a mathematical equation for or whatever to explain, oh, you know, time and space and depth and perception and all this other stuff. We can come up with math to explain that, but I don't believe we can come up with math to explain emotions from our spirit and from our, you know, our soul. And I think this is kind of where the fifth dimension is. And so the energy and the emotion and the perception of our soul and our spirit from the fifth dimension can work back through the fourth dimension, correlate with the kind of some of the emotions that we have in here and in the third dimension, and can basically resonate back and forth, where we can program our soul on the fifth dimension, and our soul then mirrors back to us here on the third dimension what we want. And through the lens of the fourth dimension, where we're able to instantly create and have things manifest through our thoughts, then this creates the ability to have an experience both on the fifth and the third dimension that we have through the lens of the fourth dimension of having it being able to be created.
So the fourth dimension is almost like a mechanic in and of itself as well. So like the third dimension is kind of the mechanics of the material,
mm-hmm.
the mechanics of energy at a very slow vibration to seem solid to us,
mm-hmm.
and also being chained to time. Fourth, we're not so much chained to time. It's more of just the mechanic of the lens that you're talking about as a focusing between the third and fifth dimension. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. And the fifth dimension is still an aspect of experiencing, but experiencing without the feeling of necessarily being connected to our physical body. It's the core of who we are, because what would be our wants and desires and what would be our aspirations and passions of our spirit and our soul if we weren't constantly worrying about keeping our bodies at a certain temperature, not too hot, not too cold, keeping them fed so we're actually alive and, you know, don't die, and, you know, having to sleep for a few hours here and a few hours there and all this other stuff that we have to do just to keep our physical body working. What if we didn't have to worry about that? What would be our motivations? You know, we wouldn't have to necessarily go to work, because the idea of going to work is to, you know, create an income so that we can buy the food and shelter so that we can stay alive.
See, and that's the whole thing about that, this third dimensional experience, is that if we didn't have the opportunity to go through staying alive and all that other stuff, would we be missing out on what this experience is affording us by of a spiritual growth? In other words, we have to have the illusion of this, to be buying into the illusion of this, that everything is finite and that things are at risk and all this other stuff, to really be able to kind of grasp the richness of it.
Yeah, and this brings in the whole idea of our multidimensional selves, where we can actually experience something on the third dimension on multiple dimensions at the same time. You know, we can experience in a mental thought process of, we have an experience. Was it a good experience or a bad experience? Well, this is our thought. This is our ego. Okay, well, on a fifth dimensional level, it was emotional energy. Did it feel good to our spirit, or did it feel negative to our spirit? Did we like it, or did we not like it? If we didn't like it, our fifth dimensional self would probably be like, hey, let's not do that anymore, and guide us as well as it could to not stick our finger in the light socket anymore and go more over to the places where it's more exciting. And through the fourth dimension, where the actual mechanics of, oh, I just had an analogy for the fourth dimension. If you send something in the mail, there's a different amount of time from when you send it off and to when it reaches its destination. And that time in between there would be kind of like the fourth dimension sending it through different trucks, different handlers, different stations and everything like that. Whereas where you are, where you sent the package off to begin with, is kind of like the fifth dimension part of yourself, where it's like, I would like to have an experience. And when you actually receive the package, that's like your third dimensional self actually receiving it, you know, in a physical sense, and then being able to have the experience, mirroring back the emotional experience to your fifth dimensional self that it had the thought of in the first place.
Okay.
I hope I'm not losing you.
No, it makes sense. I can see what you're saying. I think it's almost like different shades of the emotion.
Yeah.
You know, there's the emotion of receiving it. There's the emotion of anticipating, of wanting it, which are just kind of a similar emotion with different shadings on it.
Yeah, because to me, from my belief system, emotions create the spice of life, the rainbow of experience. If you don't have emotions whatsoever, like, let's say, Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, you're still able to, you know, have thoughts and stuff, but you're not able to fully engage in a third-dimensional sentient experience with other people of human beings. Sure, you could do the whole rock thing, you could do the fish thing, and you could do the bird thing, but, you know, to actually experience emotions like humans do, and animals and other mammals that have this emotional body, you're not able to experience that. And I think that in and of itself allows us to live on a very multidimensional level, where we're actually experiencing things on so many different levels in so many different ways in so many different areas that if you start to think about it, like we're kind of doing in this episode, you know, it could kind of be like, wow, it's actually amazing we haven't all gone, you know, completely crazy and started going, trying to take not only ourselves but everyone else out. And yeah, you could say there's wars and everything and whatever, but I'm talking to a much larger degree.
You're talking about a larger degree than wars?
If we're thinking about all the levels that we can be working on, you know, the mental level where we have thoughts and where we have our perceptions and, you know, all these other things, and then we have our emotions that mix in with our thoughts that also get information from our physical body, and then there are emotions for how we feel about how we interacted with somebody at this point in time, you know, this day. And if we get to a point where we start thinking about the fifth dimension selves or higher selves, and then our fourth dimension about, you know, oh, we put a thought out here, you know, that it's real in some place in the universe, and I don't want that to actually happen because it was a pretty negative thought against, you know, this person that I actually care about. And so you start thinking about all these things, it's kind of like, oh, we can actually exist on all these different levels and not go completely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Or crazier than we already are. You know?
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting concepts on this here. Well, I think we've kind of run the gamut of this one.
Yeah. We went pretty far. We went to some very interesting places with this one for sure.
I know. Yeah. Next week, you're probably going to start peeling back what the sixth dimension and stuff like that. But I haven't spent any time delving on that idea at all.
I have no idea what the sixth dimension would be under what we talked about tonight.
No, I couldn't even begin to say. Maybe something like a group consciousness of sorts. I don't know.
Like a tribe.
Maybe there's a planetary consciousness that would be considered a. I mean, and I always wonder too the difference between, because I've heard differences between densities versus dimensions and all sorts of things. And I think that they talk about densities as referred to consciousness as dimensions are more referring to the mechanics of it.
Okay, so just to summarize, if we're talking about dimensions of the mechanics of how things work, do you think what we talked about tonight, does that sound reasonable? The definition of a dimension is more of a mechanics of how things work. Does what we talk about tonight sound reasonable, or did we slip a little bit into more of levels of consciousness and out of the idea of dimension?
No, in aspects of consciousness, I think we had a better division of that when we talked about it in that episode. I think what we talked about definitely ties more into dimensions than aspects of consciousness. I think the things we talked about tonight are very much in line with mechanics.
Okay.
Because when we're talking about fourth dimension and the idea of time and the passage of time and being able to circumvent it and even when we talk about fifth dimension emotions, I think emotions can have a mechanics of sorts when we talk about how they might attract events or how they might, you know, tie back, especially if when you think of a fourth dimension as a lens, like you described,
mm-hmm.
a lens is kind of works as a tool, as a focusing thing, then it would also be a mechanics' way. So, yeah, I would say so.
The physics of dimensional work usage.
Right, exactly. And how the physics changes you go from one dimension to another.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Definitely interesting. I'm glad that I feel the same way. I'm glad that we didn't, you know, mix those two definitions of dimensions and consciousness up too much.
Right. I think there can be some overlap, but yeah, it's nice to see that we kind of created more of a cleaner
a clean division. Yeah, cleaner break.
You're right, exactly.
Well, we would like to thank all our listeners for taking the time to listen to this podcast. And if you would like to get more information, feel free to check out our main website at taketheredpillpodcast.com, where you'll find links to my website and David's blogs. And I think that's going to close out for tonight. So I am Donald Dalton, wishing you at Dimensional Experience.
And I'm David Deere. Keep yourself in whatever dimension you like.